Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. During the first hour, I channeled messages from some wonderful and really wonderful and great spirits, including President John F. Kennedy, Dr. Masaru Emoto, and Professor Albert Einstein on the future of humanity. And during the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll be interviewing Alfred Lebermont Weber from beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Alfred's come out with a wonderful new book called The Omniverse, Trans-Dimensional Intelligence, as well. And he's also, the book is about time travel, the afterlife, and the secret colony on Mars. And I'd like to go right to our interview with Alfred. Alfred, hi. Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Yeah. Thank you very much. Things are fine. On a typical rain coast day here in Vancouver.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, you've got an amazing background. Let me start it off by, could you tell my many listeners about your background and how you became interested in the field of extraterrestrial studies?
Well, it really sort of came about toward the end of 1972. I was general counsel of the New York City Environmental Protection Administration, and the two people that I was working for, Mayor John Lindsay of New York and the EPA Administrator Jerome Kretschmer, they decided to run for U.S. President and Mayor of New York, respectively. And at that time in my own life, I felt that the conventional 3D-based materialistic paradigm of reality wasn't really working. And I was exploring, texts and information in the multidimensional world, like Ostrander and Schroeder's psychic discoveries behind the Iron Curtain. Mm-hmm. And I reached out and became connected with a professor of experimental psychology at Rutgers University, who was also an expert in parapsychology and extraterrestrial studies. And in February of 1973, I made up my mind in that January to leave my position in government. And in February, I had a profound multidimensional experience with an apparent interdimensional entity, which was what I was just studying. I still haven't concluded mm-hmm. what that experience was, whether it was a genuine interdimensional, intelligent, extraterrestrial, or spiritual entity, whether it was an AI, artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. or a human remote influencing probe. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, that experience served to spur me on in my full-time pursuits, and by June of 73, I'd co-authored my first book in the multidimensional area, which included the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communications, which is that all UFO and ET encounters are really symbolic communications from the intelligence behind the encounters to human contactees, in the same way that a dream is a symbolic communication from one's subconscious mind to one's dreaming or conscious mind. The Swiss psychologist Carl Jung talks about this a lot. He wrote a book called Mandalas and thought of UFOs as mandalas, and that is deeply sacred and meaning objects that are full of dimensions and meaning. Well, by that time, fast forward to 1976, where I was really working in the exopolitical field and speaking, and writing in the area. And Representative Henry B. Gonzalez, the chairman of the House Banking Committee, invited me to Washington to assist him in establishing the House Select Committee on Assassinations to investigate the JFK, RFK, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X political assassinations that were really at the forefront of kind of the truth movement at that time. And because it appeared that they were false flags, and that it was the government itself that was assassinating these leaders. And that committee, of course, was established. And through this work, I met members of Jimmy Carter's president-elect inner circle. Apparently, the Carter inner circle had sent an emissary to meet me at the Hotel Carlyle in New York, and he invited me down to a dinner in DuPont Circle where I met a lot of the inner circle. They called themselves J.C. and the 12 Apostles, so there was kind of a whole Savior meme there. As you know, Jimmy Carter had a UFO experience in 1969 as they were going into a Lions Club meeting in Leary, Georgia, and he filed an official UFO sighting report in 1973, and together with John Kelly, a colleague of mine, I've also filed an article suggesting that Jimmy Carter was not only a UFO contactee, but a UFO abductee, and was taken up into spacecraft where he was debriefed on his future mission as a U.S. president.
Wow.
Well, by the fall of 1977, we had secured the Carter White House agreement for a civilian-led scientific extraterrestrial communication study where which I served as director as a futurist at Stanford Research Institute. And that began. However, that was my first experience in on-the-ground exopolitics, because in November of 1977, the CIA and the Department of Defense counterattacked to shut down the study, even though the Carter White House had approved it at the staff level. And I was called into a high-level meeting at Stanford Research Institute with the Pentagon liaison to SRI, who communicated to them that if the study went forward, the Pentagon would withdraw all of its studies monies, which then was about 25% of its $100 million annual budget from SRI. So the study was shut down by the Pentagon. And concurrently, I was attacked at the inner ring of the Pentagon with remote electromagnetic weapons. And the CIA infiltrated the House Select Committee on Assassinations, eviscerated its staff findings that these assassinations were political assassinations committed with U.S. government resources. And so this was my first practical introduction to on-the-ground exopolitics.
Wow.
The Draco Reptilian Orion Gray and AI artificial intelligence and trained elements within the U.S. government. You know, I had direct encounters with men in black and went into a whole period of my life under which I'm still operating, which is as a sovereign soul on the planet, highly targeted by the Matrix controllers. So that's essentially what happened there. It was part of my awakening.
Wow. You probably heard about this, but there was quite a bit of discussion, I remember, back in the late 70s and early 80s, Alfred, about how Jimmy Carter had gone to the, and his wife had gone to Camp, I think it was Camp David in Maryland, for one weekend in February of 1978. And he, of course, he was interested in UFO disclosure, wanted to find out about it. And I'm so happy that that he did you know, he wanted you to do a disclosure. And I'm so sorry that you had these problems at the Pentagon with these dark forces. But what I was going to say is that before February of 1978, President Carter, and you're welcome to look this up on the web, I believe he parted his hair on the left for about 50 or 60 plus years. And after that one weekend at Camp David in February of 1978, President Carter's appearance completely changed. He parted his hair on the right and has done ever since that time. Now, I've checked with some medical doctors since that time, and they said it's impossible to do that kind of dramatic change in one weekend unless, of course, the original is, for example, eliminated and replaced with a clone with a different hairstyle. I know that the reptilians do, and the Greys do cloning. That's what they do. And there was quite a bit of speculation back in the 1980s of whether President Carter had been replaced with a clone. But I just wanted to throw that in, and then we can move on to other subjects.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's very interesting. At least from the timing point of view, mm-hmm. it is congruent that that occurred because. When the CIA and the Department of Defense counterattacked on the 1977 Carter White House extraterrestrial communication study right. that I was director of,
right.
was in November of 1977.
Okay.
And that's when I had the they went and counterattacked at SRI, threatened to shut it down.
Wow.
And that's when I was attacked by Men in Black. And by electromagnetic weapons at the inner ring of the Pentagon as I was meeting with an assistant secretary of defense of the Carter White House. And in my whole targeting by remote weapons began and by Men in Black. So that's consistent with the November 1977. And then you said, what, February 1978?
Correct. There was a weekend in February 78 where Carter went to Camp David in Maryland.
Yeah.
And after that time, he was very interested in UFOs up until that one weekend in February of 78. And after that weekend, not only did his physical appearance change slightly, but some say that he also became more serious, laughed less often, and dropped the interest in UFOs completely. This is a man who'd been interested in UFOs for like more than 60 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been asked about that a great deal. This is the first time that I've been given that data as to February 1978, I can tell you that consistent with what was happening with me, I was highly targeted in 1978 and took a medical leave mm-hmm. from Stanford Research Institute mm-hmm. around February 1978 because I was so targeted. I went to my parents. My parents were then living in the Ivory Coast in Africa, where my father was doing helping me build a sugar mill in Abidjan, Ivory Coast, for the World Bank.
Wow!
And
mm-hmm.
so what I did was I took a medical leave and I flew out to the Ivory Coast and stayed with them and then just took a tour around through the Ivory Coast, Upper Volta, which was just attacked last week by IS, the ISIS people,
oh, okay.
and over to Mali and came back to the Ivory Coast and kind of took some time out because I barely escaped with my life. I only escaped with my life, I believe, because I was protected by upper-dimensional extraterrestrials who did everything from dematerialize me and teleport me whenever I would have the Men in Black and or other forces lunge at me to try and kill me.
Oh, my goodness.
So
wow.
I think that Carter and I were under probably similar circumstances. And whether or not they did take him out, I can't say.
Right.
What's interesting is that I've seen clips then of Carter where he was confronted at a public book signing And he said, oh, no, extraterrestrials have not visited Earth. There's no proof of that. And whereas back in 1973, he filed a UFO report.
Right.
So that's very different behavior.
Right.
At the same time, he's been sort of a very progressive president. He's been, you know, backing the Palestinians. I know that he was recently diagnosed with brain cancer, which I thought was probably the result of a remote targeting with bioweapons.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently, he's declared himself completely cured, which I think is remarkable.
Right.
And while he did that, when he went in and in his statement that he did have brain cancer, which many people thought he was going to be, that was, you know, kind of going to be fatal to him, he said that the one charitable donation that he was going to continue was to St. Genevieve's High School in California, which is a very progressive high school that my wife, Jerry, went to.
Oh. Uh-huh.
You know, so he has this very progressive aspect to his personality. So I didn't want to come down with any kind of hard and fast rule, but I am saying that there is, that in the November 1978 timeline, I was certainly under harsh attack by the CIA, by the Department of Defense, by the electromagnetic weapons, by the Men in Black, and all the forces that are in league with the reptilians and the Orion Greys that have basically occupied the United States government since at least 1934, when they signed a treaty with the Roosevelt administration. Concurrently, they were signing a treaty in 1936 with the Third Reich. So I hope that that's helpful.
Actually, I had heard about that 1934 treaty with Roosevelt, but I don't have much information on it. I mentioned in my previous hour about Eisenhower's.
Yeah, we're going to be publishing a document soon, and I'll be sure and send you links that'll give more background on that.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. I know from Ambassador Terrellian, he's here now, he said that the Draconians and their gray subspecies are master geneticists, and they're very good. They can clone almost any human being that they want on this planet. And the procedure that they use, the technology is about maybe 5,000 years ahead of us. And what they do is that they kill the original person, like hypothetically, President Carter back in February 78. They kill him, and then the soul, they don't have any control over. So the soul leaves the body, and they extract at the time of death that person's personality out of that body and then force it back into a cloned individual that's riddled with the implants. And then that new person looks like the old person, except that there can be variations in that. I know that the Greys, who are a subspecies of the Draconians, they're a tyrannical race, and the Greys have these big eyes. They suffer from what's called progenesis, which is a breakdown of their DNA, because they've been cloned so many times that their species now is actually slated for extinction. The Galactic Alliance is saying that you do have protection now, Alfred, and not to worry. You're not only living in a beautiful part of the world, in a beautiful country, in a beautiful city, but also they said that, you know, you're protected now like you weren't back then. I mean, even more protection. You had some protection, but this is even more protection now, so...
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good to know. You know, as a person living, it's hard for one to know. When I was doing all of that pioneering work back in 1977-78, it was a totally different landscape.
Oh, yeah.
And so things that people now would take as a matter of course, where they can go down to the White House and lobby or try not to lobby or, you know, try to get in or, you know, talk to Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail. And this has been a very, it was quite different back then.
Sure.
It was really, I would call it very active exopolitics, those of us who were in the field at that time really took our life in our hands, and we were attacked by men in black, electromagnetic weapons, the whole bit.
Sure.
But we're going to be having a lot of information coming out soon that ties this back to the Rockefellers and the deals, all the treaties that they made, which are really on behalf of the Rockefeller-Rothschild control matrix together with the AI artificial intelligence.
Right.
So
right.
A lot of the exposure is going to come out now. And so the experiences that I went through then are serving out now, because now we can really nail them and bring out the facts. It's just taken a lot of patience and a lot of steadfast digging.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. And I'd love to run this by you, because I really haven't had many people to talk about this, Alfred, but I had heard years ago that back in 1934 that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt had met with some reptilians or greys while on a trip to the Panama Canal in 1934 and signed some sort of agreement with them. I don't know anything about it. That's what I'd heard. I know that they were interacting with the Nazis during that time as well.
Yeah. It was FDR, who, of course, is an advanced Freemason,
mm-hmm.
who in fact brought the U.S. deeply into the Draco reptilian plan, and who laid the foundation for World War II,
mm-hmm.
and then laid the foundation for World War II involving the Nazis. Mm-hmm. World War II was a total false flag,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, according to our informants, who include a daughter of King Edward VIII, who was forced out of office. He was hounded out of office as a false flag, because he was actually a light worker and was not willing to go along with the satanic plans of King George V,
mm-hmm.
and his son, King George VI, who was the brother of King Edward VIII. So then they set him up with an MI5 spy, the Duchess of Windsor, and set him up for an abdication, which was a plot in which the Archbishop of Canterbury was involved. And the reason for this is that Adolf Hitler was actually the half-brother of King Edward VIII and King George VI, and was the son, the illegitimate son of King George V.
Mm.
And they did this so that in 1936, they forced King Edward VIII off the throne, so that then they would bring King George VI on, who was also an occultist and a draconian, I mean, follower of the Dracos,
right.
and who would become king. And then they could bring Adolf Hitler on to become head of state of Germany,
mm-hmm.
so that he could be the half-brother of King George VI, and they could perceive with World War II as a false flag, which is really a false flag of the Windsor family. But behind it all were the Draco reptilians and the Orion Greys that had set up this, because they work outside of time from the lower fourth dimension.
Right.
And they had set up this in the agreement between Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1934 in Balboa, Panama, and then in 1936 with Adolf Hitler, who was the half-brother of King George VI.
Wow.
So this was all behind the scenes. And that's... so that we had World War II as a continuation of the false flag of World War I, which, of course, was set up as a family fight of all the royal families in Europe, manipulated by the Draco's. Once an AI-entrained Draco family, an AI-entrained Draco-entrained human, the Rothschilds, had sent over their agents in 1907 to set up the bank panic of 1908 to establish the Federal Reserve Bank in 1913, which was the sine qua non to set up World War One, because that way they had control of the monetary system in World War One. One of the purposes of World War One was so that Henry Ford, for example, could earn $1 trillion in dollars of that time. It was all about depopulation and furthering the Draco agenda on the planet.
Well, I'm happy to say that from what I've heard, I know you have sources too. I'd love to hear your viewpoint on this. Corey Good was on my show a couple of months ago, Alfred, and he said that this entire solar system now is under quarantine by the Blue Avians, which are part of the Galactic Alliance.
Corey, could you speak up a bit? It's difficult to hear you.
Yeah, can you hear me now? Is it all?
Yeah, better.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. I had Corey Good on my show a few months ago, and he was with the Secret Space Program. And he said that the Blue Avians, who exist in the 6th to the 9th dimensions and who are part of the Galactic Alliance, have quarantined this entire solar system, keeping in the bad boys. And the bad boys can't leave. The reptilians can't leave. And their day of judgment will be coming one of these days, very soon. And so the timeline, he said, has changed from Third World War and Armageddon to a very bright and very positive future for humanity. And you are being protected, they tell me now.
Yeah. No. I can't speak to Corey Good's data or model, but I can say that based on our data, and people can go to a website, positivefuture.info, and there we have a 27-page paper which sets out the case for the fact that on December 21st, 2012, or thereabouts, the principal timeline on which our Earth time space hologram is traveling shifted and became activated on around that date, December 21st, 2012, which is really the Earth's organic timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shifted from a catastrophic timeline, which was part of an artificial timeline created by an invading sentient artificial intelligence that has invaded this planet concurrently with a whole network of manipulatory ETs, including the Dracos, including the Orion Greys, including the Anunnakis and others, all in this contiguous area, going back some 200,000-300,000 years, that is sometimes popularly referred to as the Lucifer Rebellion, where the existing kind of spiritual governance in this sector of the galaxy was overthrown, and we've had kind of a Star Wars ever since then, and we've been under quarantine ever since then.
Right.
And that process is now changing, and as part of that, the Earth's positive timeline was activated in December of 2012. And so we've been documenting all of this and relating it to Earth, to time science, and to a lot of the data. And I feel also that a lot of the work that we've been doing since 1973, when we were first became active in this area, relates to a termination of the Lucifer Rebellion, relates to a termination of the occupation of Earth by the Draco Reptilians, the Orion Greys, and the AI, artificial intelligence, and to a reintegration of the planet. And the specific discipline that I use, apart from exopolitics, which is a science that my book, my 2000 book developed, and apart from the Omniverse, which is a model now that my 2015 book, The Omniverse, which really updates us for the first time since the year 3500 BC. It's the first major conceptual update in human science since 3500 BC, which is when the universe was first developed by the scientists, and that was updated again in 1895 when the term multiverse was developed and coined by the American novelist, psychologist, and philosopher William James to mean the totality of all universes. Mm-hmm. But if we go back to ordinary conventional history, 3500 to 3200 BC, it was the Sumerian astronomers mm-hmm. and cosmologists that first codified our concept of universe as a discrete, organic, holographic creation of time, mm-hmm. energy, space, and matter that included all time, space, energy, and matter. And William James updated that in 1895. Recently, two Stanford scientists have developed an estimate of the actual number of physical universes of time, space, energy, and matter that they are in the multiverse. And that number is so large that our human minds cannot comprehend it. Mm-hmm. And however, if we were to write it out, say, in 12-point type on a computer, the number itself would be more than 260 million miles long.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's how many universes there are in the multiverse. And so, so that people who say, oh, Earth is the only inhabited planet, are operating under complete mind control. I mean, they're just like,
I know.
Mind control, and the result of over 300,000 years of the universe governance itself quarantining us so that the Lucifer Rebellion would not spread. I believe that's the accurate story. Well, fast forward to 2014 and 2015, as a result of our research in our new book, a new science-based term now exists, which is the Omniverse, which is defined as, quote, the totality. Actually, there's an equation for it, and that is that the Omniverse equals the multiverse, namely all universes, plus the spiritual dimensions, which equal the souls, the spiritual beings, and source or God. And what's the difference between Sumerian times and now? Well, the difference is that back in Sumerian times, that was the time that the Anunnaki was occupying Earth, and you'll notice that they invented religions back then.
That's true.
They invented government, and the monarchs and the priests in religion all wore funny hats.
Right.
And they're the funny hats that made them look like the Anunnaki, like the extraterrestrials.
Right.
Because the extraterrestrial wanted to make themselves gods, mm-hmm. and to keep the whole area of the spiritual dimensions in kind of a mystery for the Earthlings and mm-hmm. keep us under control.
Sure.
Well, now in 2015 we can map the Omniverse and prove its existence through the law of evidence in the scientific method, mm-hmm. because we now have the replicable scientific empirical evidence for the spiritual dimension that is gathered by the same rules of the scientific method as we have for proving the existence of the universe, namely the rules for dealing with time, space, energy, and matter, which is, you know, the normal scientific canon. So our job now is to get this model propagated. We'll see how long it takes, whether it takes a century or two or within our lifetimes, we don't know.
Sure, sure.
And to take the area of the spiritual dimensions, namely the afterlife, the interlife, the intelligent community of souls, the spiritual beings and source or God, out of that area of mystery and into the area of the scientific canon to break down the gatekeeping walls that the university system and the educational system have placed, mm-hmm. where you cannot talk about or teach the science of the omniverse, namely the science of the afterlife, the science of soul, parapsychology, etc., at the university level, at the secondary or primary school level. So that's basically what we've done in developing this book is to begin, and the book itself, part of its origin lies in a request that Oxford University Press, which is a division of Oxford University, made to me they asked me to write a book on extraterrestrial civilizations and the law. And so what I did when I started to write that, I discovered that there was no adequate typology of extraterrestrial civilizations in the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
And so out of that grew this, was the first primary research that I had to do before developing and discovering the model of the omniverse, which mm-hmm. I said is the first basic scientific discovery of reality that we've had in 3,500 years, mm-hmm. if you don't count the multiverse, which our favorite Bostonian novelist and poet did in 1895.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating, fascinating. Alfred, you're such an interesting fellow. I'm so happy to have you on today. You told me a story privately and also here in this information that you sent me about the science of exopolitics was first formally defined in 2000 by your book, Exopolitics. And you have a story here. You're recognized as the founding father of exopolitics. Could you outline the meaning of this term and how your book was secretly time-traveled back to 1971 by the DARPA project?
Yes, yes. This is where it all gets very interesting, and I have to credit some of the U.S. chrononauts, one in particular, Andy Bashago, who came forward in public and blew the whistle on the DARPA CIA time travel project. And told me that he had seen my book, Exopolitics, in 1971.
Wow!
Which was over 40 years before it was written.
My goodness!
Or about 40 years before it was written in Vancouver, Canada. In 1999.
Wow, amazing.
And so what occurred is that I in 1999 mm-hmm. wrote a book called Exopolitics, which, for example, is the social science, as you said.
Right.
That basically is like any other social science, like anthropology, but its purpose is to study relations among intelligent civilizations in the universe, or in any other universe in our multiverse. Mm-hmm. For example, exopolitics is the social science that would study the dynamic interrelations among the Draco Reptilians, the Orion Greys, and other that are under secret treaty relations with the U.S. government, and hence brought about the termination of the proposed 1977 Carter White House ET study. So I had all of that experience sort of brewing inside of me for almost 40 years before I sat down in 1999 to write the book here in Vancouver, Canada. Mm-hmm. Well, I sat down and wrote it, and people can go to Amazon.com and actually download a very unusual book. It's a book that first formally defined the science of exopolitics and was in 2005 secretly time-traveled back to 1971 by the DARPA CIA Project Pegasus time travel program, wow, where it was witnessed by U.S. chrononaut Andrew D. Bishago. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I know that, I mean, he told that to me in 2005 at the time of its publication. And it took me a long time to process that because, among other things, I'm a former civil liberties lawyer and privacy, and I taught the Bill of Rights at the University of Texas in the government department, and privacy is a great concern of mine, and the fact that a government agency was, you know, had full access to my to a book that I wrote 40 years before I wrote it and was spying on me is of great concern. And so I can corroborate his material through two different examples. One is that in 1971, I met one of my tasks as general counsel of the EPA was to meet with and give talks on the environment, and I got an invitation. They asked me, "Hey, would you come and talk to us?" And I said, "Sure." And the day that this fellow came to pick me up, he was different from the housewives and students that were general environmentalists. He was a man in a suit, very serious man. We drove for about 2 hours or so down to near Delaware, Washington, and we went to a nondescript office building in the second floor, and there were about 50 men in suits there, and they turned out to be CIA and Department of Defense officials who had been briefed on my future book, Exopolitics, that the CIA had in its position.
Oh, my God.
And on my future work, Mapping the Omniverse, and on my future whistleblowing like I'm doing now.
I have to ask you this question, Alfred. Forgive me for interrupting you. Do you think they're still using those programs to time travel into the future to identify interesting people like yourself who they may want to track or keep track of or something like that, or alter? Do you think they're still doing that?
People can go to exopolitics.com.
Okay.
And on the right-hand menu, there's an index item called Time Travel and Teleportation.
Uh-huh.
And there, you go in, there's a bunch of articles on time travel, and there's one that's called Time Travel and Political Control.
Wow.
It was originally published in Veritas magazine in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
There I set out how time travel technology is being used for political control.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. And so I'm going to be publishing shortly, even more information on how time travel has been used going back to 1966 in my life. Mm-hmm. When I was time travel surveyed at Yale Law School by Winthrop Rockefeller, one of the two Rockefeller brothers, one of the Rockefeller brothers. I mean, you've got David Winthrop, Lawrence Nelson, mm-hmm. who used the time travel technology because the CIA's like their private fiefdom. And much of the experimentation of the time travel, a lot of it took place on Rockefeller private property mm-hmm. in their corporate offices. Mm-hmm. And so I was time travel surveyed by Winthrop Rockefeller, who was a future governor of Arkansas, and the patron of Bill and Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. who was also a time travel predicted president who came to time travel me in 1966 at Yale Law School.
Wow.
And I'm going to release now how, and that's why you can tell how now in January 2016, Hillary Clinton made a statement about releasing the ET UFO files.
All right.
This goes back to the Rockefellers' use of secret time travel going back to the 1960s. And their surveying and their use of Bill and Hillary Clinton, who, unlike Annie Bishago and myself, are not coming forward as whistleblowers, because you have to make a major distinction here, and I see that we're almost out of time.
We got 10 minutes.
Between what I call the UFO ET disclosure meme, which is full of lights in the sky, a lot of baubles, and a lot of meaningless BS. Okay?
Right. Okay.
It's just to get people excited.
Sure.
And that's what U.S. presidents talk about. Mm-hmm. It's just baloney, right?
Right?
And so, over the ages, going back, i.e., get the public thinking about UFOs, but no serious disclosure about the secret space programs, the bases on Mars.
Sure, sure.
The Draco reptilian takeover, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So now, in 2016, we are ready to blow this wide open, and we're releasing a lot of articles shortly where I'll be releasing my interactions with Winthrop Rockefeller going back to 1966. He's the patron of the two Clintons. Hillary Clinton is the latest dog and pony show.
Sure.
And, you know, they use the whole UFO ET community to go out there and go, oh, she's going to talk about UFOs.
Yeah, I know.
And it's just these baubles, but none yeah. of the release of the serious stuff. And meanwhile, right. the serious programs, which are the secret space program with the witnesses, the Mars witnesses who have actually been there, like Andrew Bishago, William Stillings, Bernard Mendez, they have been cut out by the Rockefeller CIA operatives and fellow travelers who are embedded in the CIA, in the UFO ET community. To shut out the real stuff,
the real
and
stuff.
To talk about baloney.
Sure, sure.
And that's essentially a reading of what's going out there in the
sure,
public.
Sure.
I hope that I've been coherent, that did what I say just make sense to you?
It did, but my sound engineer said that there's programming guidelines on my station, so don't repeat it. Just no profanity. That's all. I just wanted to tell you that. We're not supposed to have it on the air. But
yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, don't repeat it.
I meant bull crap.
well, just that's fine. That's fine, Alfred. But anyway, we have programming. But anyway, you are absolutely fascinating in your analysis, because what you're saying is that There are certain sectors within the United States government and private entities, including the Rockefellers, which apparently have used time travel to identify you. They identified you back in the 70s for a book that they got in 2005, which was like 40 years later. And this...
Yeah, it was earlier even, in 1966, while I was a student at Yale.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I'll even substitute the word PSYOP. Uh-huh. In other words, the Clintons, the Obamas, Hillary Clinton, all they're doing through their UFO ET stuff through John Podesta are PSYOPs. Mm-hmm. And they have been commissioned to do this to the 1993 to 96 Rockefeller Initiative as a PSYOP. It's to give them little UFO baubles instead of disclosure of the deep of the deep secret space program that in turn would release planetary teleportation, new energy that would bring us into a new era way beyond the fossil fuel nuclear era that would make a paradise planet. So that's what's at stake.
Well, I couldn't agree with you.
And I apologize to the engineer.
That's okay.
About the profanity. I'm a radio talk show host going back to WBAI in New York for over 40 years. I thought times has changed, but I guess not.
No, it's okay. You're fine, my friend. Don't worry. Well, obviously, Alfred, you have so much to say. I know you sent me a briefing that's, I don't know how many pages long. It's long, 15, 20 pages, and we've only gotten to maybe a third of what your many topics are. So I'm going to have you back.
No. Now in 2016, we are releasing briefings, and we're releasing over 40 pages of briefings for the public now so that they really understand what's going on. They're having the wool pulled over their eyes by government operatives who are in the UFO and ET community or fellow travelers who are spreading PSYOPs on behalf of Hillary Clinton, who are agents of the Rockefellers and the CIA.
Sure. Well, it's very, very interesting and fascinating what you're saying, because I've been wondering about that. Why now? Of course, Corey Good talked about that, and so did Randy Kramer, that they were with the Secret Space Program. They've come public. They've both been on my show last year. And they thought that that there would be some limited kind of disclosure, which would actually end up just a little...
Never, because all of the presidents, including Hillary Clinton, are tasked and trained to put out nothing but the UFO ET disclosure meme, which is a PSYOPs.
Right.
They don't have the hard information, and they never will.
Right. Well, I'm having a lady from Norway a week from today called Emma Louise Hansen, and she's been in contact with the Andromeda Galaxy for many decades, so she's going to be giving messages from them next week here on the program. But, Alfred, you have so many interesting things. Could you give out your website again where people could look up some of this information?
Yes, people can go to exopolitics.com.
Okay.
They can go to newsinsideout.com. And my new book, The Omniverse, which I think for a while it's been number one in New Thought on Amazon. Just go to exopolitics.com or go direct to Amazon. You can get it in ebook format, or you can get it in soft cover format.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, you're doing an incredible job, and I just want to thank everyone so much for listening today. We have about a minute left, Alfred, and I'd love to give you the rest of the time. Got a little over the minute left before we have to go in the program here.
Well, you know, I think 2016 is a brand new year. It's a positive year. I'm really optimistic. We're about to release a new interview with independent scientist Loren Murray on the millennium transition that we're going in now. She had been one of my major doomsayers, and even she is optimistic about this year.
Oh, how lovely.
I think we're in for quite a positive year.
Well, all my astrology friends tell me the same thing. They say that For me, 2015 was okay, but it was kind of a mixed bag. But this year, they're all saying that this year should be a far better year. And I want to thank you so much for coming on today, Alfred. Wonderful to meet you last weekend in Vancouver. And keep up the good work, and I'd love to have you on again sometime soon, my friend. You have so much interesting things to say.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day, Alfred, and thank you so much, everyone, for listening. This is Ted Marr broadcasting from KKNW on 1150 AM from Out of This World Radio. And next month will be radio and television, and I hope you have a wonderful, fantastic weekend. Bye-bye.